Hello, everybody. This is Bill Cameron from The Drive. Podcasts of The Drive are presented by Southeastern Industrial Contractors, now hiring for great-paying skilled trade positions. Call 334-209-6355 to learn more. Thanks for listening.
Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7.
And online at ESPNAU.com.
To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502. Or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Hello, everybody. Welcome in to The Drive. Did my mic cut off?
Yeah, just now.
Oh, okay. Yeah, it is the Monday edition of The Drive. Bill and Dan, Brian Matthews will be joining us here momentarily, and that is the regular Monday grouping. Drew getting the afternoon off, so Dan is at the board, and we'd love for you to join in as well. Hope everybody had a nice weekend. It was a beautiful weekend, just a gorgeous weekend, and now for a few days we're going to get some fall weather. Temperatures are going to be in the 40s for a few nights. That is that's just amazing. That just means me with my hurt wrists and everything got to drag the heavy plants into the garage after I can. Dan, don't you want to come over and help
with the garage?
The first thing we need to do. I think I may have mentioned.
Is Kennedy this. Not old enough to do this yet?
No, she's not quite.
Okay, all right,
not quite. But
maybe next Christmas.
I think I mentioned what I noticed in the garage last Monday.
Oh right, yeah. You think it's building a nest or something?
I don't know. Scary clown? A giant spider?
All right. So last Monday night,
getting closer with the second one.
Yeah, you're right. Last Monday night, I go to pull the trash cans out, the trash can and the recycling can out, and as I lifted up the trash can, probably. About a three foot snake that was maybe an inch and a half around, made a nice slow wiggle toward the pile of outdoor furniture that I have in the side of the garage, right where I have the dog carrier and a lot of cushions that I'd brought in. Mm. So I'm sure it found a nice, comfortable place.
Yeah.
So the next thing I've got to do, now that it's going to get in the 40s, I need to move those cushions and bring plants in. But I would like to let, the snake know that he can go outside, okay? I don't need him in something that I pick up or anything like that.
You know, I think Dusty would be up for the task of letting the snake know that it needs to be outside.
The problem is if I open the garage and Dusty's there, Dusty's gonna check out the neighborhood.
You're gonna unleash
before he goes looking for the snake.
Unleash more than just a snake on the on the Cameron neighbors.
Yeah. So anyway. Be ready for some cool weather for the next few days, though.
I'm ready.
Absolutely am. I mean, it's great getting the Halloween. I've got getting all the Halloween decorations finalized, trying to get everything out. I didn't realize I had so much stuff. Oh, I like doing stuff
collect
like that.
Stuff
do you?
Over the years. Oh, yeah.
You like doing that stuff?
I forget, was it last year, too? It felt like we didn't get any cool weather until, like, Halloween week, and then it dropped into I think we had a day where it got into the low 30s. In October last year, but it's it does feel like especially since the storm, right, Bill? Like it felt like some cooler weather has really has blown through.
There hasn't been much rain, I can tell you that. But yeah, we're gonna have a little cool weather. So it's back to football for Auburn and basketball about to get started as well. We've got a lot to talk about here today. Bill, Dan, Brian Matthews from AuburnSports.com. I had a chance to get about a 10-minute interview with Bruce Pearl this morning. It ran actually right up to about the time that Hugh Freeze's press conference was, so wasn't able to make it to that. Brian, anything that was really noteworthy from Hugh Freeze today?
Nothing I would call breaking. He talked about what they did in the off week. They only practiced twice, Tuesday, Wednesday. Wednesday was really physical, he said. And they gave the team Thursday and Friday off.
Fall break,
right? And then they came back, and I guess they did something on Sunday. And he's giving the team today off. Usually they're off Sunday, and they work Monday, I believe. If I got that right. He said, not surprisingly, the focus was on executing in those critical moments, which we've talked about a lot.
Yeah, obviously.
He also mentioned that They want to do a better job of getting 27 the ball. And yes, I want to stand up and applaud, right?
Yes.
Yeah, 13 carries is not enough, especially when you go on the road and trying to beat a good team.
Right.
A team
you need that, to keep, you right. Need, when you need to keep the ball away from teams, yeah. I mean, when you're playing pretty good offenses, which Auburn was against Georgia and Missouri at home has been pretty good.
What Auburn feels like they need to avoid, I mean, because – I mean, you can talk about, yes, when Auburn trails in the fourth quarter and they want to throw the ball a little bit more, it's tougher to lean on the running backs like maybe they should. But Auburn has had, in, I think, multiple games, you've had stretches where, I mean, early in the game, not when Auburn is trailing by a lot in the fourth quarter and needs to mount a comeback, there will be multiple drives in the second quarter where it feels like It's really quarterback heavy. You know, that was the case in the Arkansas game with Hank in early. That was the case certainly against Cal. And I think that's if something getting Jarquez and Damari more involved in the first half, I think is probably going to be something that needs to be. I mean, and yes, you can. I mean, if Auburn has a lead in the fourth quarter, you can talk about that too. But getting them involved earlier feels like it needs to be a priority in the second half. And as Jason pointed out, Auburn, until that fourth and one in Athens, Auburn had done a pretty good job with whatever offense they could have.
Yeah, they had called runs well over 50% of the time.
They were closer to 50-50 than they'd been at any point against a major conference opponent, and you wonder if that could be part of the plan going forward. Brian, you talked about winning in those executing in those critical moments.
Yeah.
You know, I would say first and 10 is a critical moment for Auburn because it's not second and 5 enough for this offense. It's not second and 3 enough. And getting to watch a lot of different offenses on Saturday with Auburn on the bye week and being in Athens and watching the way that Georgia offense executed against Auburn, it's like that's the key. I mean, if you're looking for something that's, I mean, there's other stuff too, but you're looking for something that's missing. Like Georgia does such a good job of keeping Carson Beck out of third and long.
Oh yeah.
Of avoiding the downs where the percentages don't favor the quarterback. You know, down in distances where low percentage stuff, and it feels like Auburn, It's been low percentage third down entirely too often.
I would think, and
that's got nothing to do with turnovers.
I haven't found the numbers for this, but it seems like Auburn is in second and long a lot. Second and long is not usually beneficial.
Well, I believe Auburn's first play from scrimmage against Georgia was a sack. Am I correct?
Yes,
yeah.
It was.
So it's just, and then Georgia's first series should have been on three and out, but there's a penalty, and then they drive the rest of the way down and score a touchdown.
Yep.
I mean, those two things are just, to me, an example of what Auburn's problems have been all season long. It's just the same thing over and over. It's just lack of execution. You can call it a critical moment. You can call it, the first play of the game or whatever. They just keep making bad mistakes at bad times.
Yeah, it's difficult. It makes it even more difficult when you're second and long, third and long.
Yeah,
and,
it does.
And if your defense is facing – second and short, third and short.
That's why maybe giving it to a guy who's averaging, is it 6-something a carry?
Close to 7, yeah, over 6.
Yeah, might be a good idea to get into those second and third and shorts.
Yeah, no question about it. So we'd love to hear from you as we get started for, again, it's the second half of the season. Auburn needs to have a good second half the football season. I mean, I read some of the comments.
Yeah.
That Hugh Freeze had. I mean, they've been close a few times. I mean, you look around now at the Southeastern Conference, and we'll find out a lot more. Saturday, Georgia goes to Austin.
Yeah, should be a good one.
If Texas wins that ball game,
they're the front runners
comfortably,
all the way. Yeah.
No, then it's them and the rest.
Yeah,
because it really appears that the rest of the league. And we'll wait and see on Georgia now. I've got a feeling Georgia's going to play really well this week.
I do, too. And Texas has not got a really tough schedule in the SEC compared to a lot of
other
teams.
No, they don't. But, I mean, this is going to be a challenge for them with Georgia coming in. But the rest of the league appears that they're capable of beating each other. Auburn hasn't done it yet, but they should have. Mississippi State has played a little better, but they haven't. Auburn and State are the only ones that haven't. Everybody else is beating everybody else. I mean, don't look now. Vandy's 4-2.
Yeah, and I would say that 6-0 for the entire of Power Four college football. This is, to me, one of the more exciting seasons so far, and it's leading up to what I think will be a fabulous first ever 12-team playoff.
I agree.
Florida's lone conference win is still against Mississippi State, so I would say they're probably still in that bottom looking to look. I mean, when your only win in the league is against the bottom. Granted, they took Tennessee to overtime.
I know, that's what I mean. They're capable. You've seen teams are very close. There doesn't appear to be a great deal of difference between winning and losing for a lot of teams in this league.
Sure. And even in the case of Auburn, like you could say that Georgia pulled away at the end, but the other conference losses for Auburn are games that were Oklahoma and Arkansas were incredibly close fourth quarters for Auburn, which would suggest
Auburn's been close enough to have won five games.
Which would I guess State and then their State who's been destroyed. Granted, they played better Saturday against Georgia, but they've been destroyed in a couple of conference games, so it feels like maybe they're comfortably at the bottom. But
real quick on Florida, if you're on the road playing a team that is a big favorite over you,
go
that's ranked,
for the win.
You go for two.
Absolutely.
That's automatic. Yep. It shouldn't even been discussed. Yep. All right, call a timeout and get that play because every team should have
and
that
if you
play.
You don't make it, hey, you went for it. You gave it a shot.
And it's a similar argument that folks had when Auburn didn't go for two in that Iron Bowl a couple of years ago.
It wasn't on the road, but you're a huge underdog.
Right. But the argument for extending the game was your defense is playing so well. Right. You take them out of it by putting it all on one play for your offense.
Are you talking Auburn or are you talking Florida?
Well, I think both cases they would say.
You're just so worried when you're playing an offense that was explosive as Alabama's.
And is talented.
You know,
right.
Sure. But I think,
NFL
players. I think in both cases you go for two. But I can understand, you know, a more conservative approach, even if it's, you know, I think it was in that moment it felt like they had a much better shot with that play than they were going to have in overtime, even with the way Tennessee's offense. And by the way, what's the story there? Tennessee's offense, another game where
three straight games. This is the third straight game Tennessee's offense has sputtered.
I think they need to. I mean, they're going to need offense Saturday.
They absolutely are.
They're going to need offense Saturday.
They are. I mean, the thing is, though, they're liable to get it with just a few plays because the Alabama secondary can give up a touchdown in a flash.
I thought that game was over at 14-0. Early because it's like South Carolina's not coming back and you know down 14 against
Man,
Alabama
Sellers
on the road.
Was completing 80% of his passes.
They only had like four incompletions the rest of the way. They go on a 19-0 run. South Carolina does, and then you've got the touchdown that's originally not called a touchdown and overturned correctly.
You're right.
And then you
miss the 2-point conversion, but you get. Then you recover
one of
the great onside kick ever. But
the sidewinder from that kid really
didn't handle the clock well.
No.
After the onside kick, they should have had a lot more time. After they got the first down, spiked the ball.
Oh
they
yeah,
had
no
20 seconds run off.
Yeah, I didn't know what was going on there with the clock management after the onside kick was recovered, and it was almost like they didn't think they were going to get the ball back. And
Alabama was ready to lose that ball game. They really were, and that was. That was shocking to see in Tuscaloosa.
I did not think that game was – I mean, once – and because we'd seen that – you've seen that play out enough times where once Alabama jumps on that 14-0 lead.
Oh, yeah. Goodbye.
Like it's the beginning of a 42-7 type of game.
49-10.
19-0 South Carolina run in the second and third quarters. I mean, it just would have been a disastrous loss. They avoid it.
Yep.
And now they – I mean, they're still in the mix with Tennessee on Saturday.
And a heck of a ball game Saturday night. LSU Ole Miss was another one where Ole Miss looks. I mean, Ole Miss is dominating, and then
couldn't put them away. Really,
No, they could not. That's what I mean. How many times it's like the same story for so many different SEC teams this year?
It really is.
It has been crazy. So
and Lane sounded like a guy who'd lost a playoff game afterward.
That was a huge loss for them.
He's talking like this. You know, if it went unspoken, but I think the subtext from Lane Kiffin after the game last, you know, on Saturday night was, if Ole Miss doesn't make the playoff, it will be because they could not hold on to this game. This will be the game that keeps Ole Miss.
Well, if they had beaten Kentucky, it wouldn't be the problem.
But they were so close and in such control of this game as compared to the Kentucky game. they were in control, like you said, of this LSU game for as long as they were, and LSU comes back and wins it, and it turns Georgia into a must-win for Ole Miss.
Oh yeah,
because 9-3, Ole Miss probably won't make the playoff.
They've got to go to Arkansas the week before they host Georgia.
They have to do that too. But I mean, at the very least, the Georgia game
becomes a must-win game.
And they got to go to Oklahoma at home. Okay, they got to go to Florida, which could be a tough. Well,
I think at Arkansas the week before they played Georgia.
That's tough too.
They've got to watch there, and then of course. I mentioned Vandy. I'm sure we all had Vandy winning back-to-back conference games. What is the deal? Kentucky can't win at home.
Yeah.
It's weird.
Could be good news for Auburn.
Yeah, maybe.
I mean, the thing is, what are the odds of them losing four straight conference games at home? That's what it would have to be for Auburn to get the win up at Lexington.
What were the odds of them losing Saturday night? I mean, they were a 14-plus point favorite.
Vandy is a better team.
Yep.
The whole game. Vandy won all four quarters of that game. Yeah, it was they're better on both sides of the ball than I think anybody realized going into the season. And Pavia,
I think, has lifted that whole team up himself. He has them believing that, because he can make plays. And because he makes plays, they believe that, hey, they've got to keep fighting, because if they do something right, he's gonna make the other team.
And he'll be back in Jordan-Hare Stadium in about three or four more weeks.
Yep. And Auburn had better not come back. Auburn had better not be 2-6 hosting Vandy.
Oh, boy.
All right, we'll get to our first break. Love for you to join in. 334-321-1390. That's the Drive hotline sponsored by Skybar.
You can also text the show, 334-564-1840 on the Drive text box, presented by our friends at Southeastern Industrial Contractors. They also sponsor the podcast, available wherever you get your podcasts.
We'll get to our first break. Come on in and join us here on the Monday Drive.
Yellowwood knows that a five-star backyard is the place to make lasting memories.
The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390, toll free at 888-382-7502, or email thedrive@ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into the Monday Drive. Bill, Dan, Brian Matthews from AuburnSports.com. I'd nearly forgotten, and Dan reminded me that that game two of the National League Championship Series is underway.
It's amazing to think.
Pretty much the reverse of last night.
The last time we did a show, we were previewing Game 5, Dodgers-Padres. I mean, that was Friday. And the Dodgers winning that one. And shutting out the Padres again, who had two shutout victories for the Dodgers in Game 4 and Game 5 after the way the Padres hit the ball the first three.
The Dodgers threw a perfect – well, it was just a no-hitter because they'd given up a couple of walks. But they had retired 27 batters without giving up a hit, had pitched 28 or 29 consecutive scoreless innings.
I talked about Kike and Teoscar on Friday, who both homered in that game five. Pay the man his money, like John Malkovich says in Rounders. Teoscar Hernandez, pay that man his money to keep him around. And while we're paying people, Jack Flaherty probably made a pretty decent argument that he deserves a big contract from somebody.
Yankees worried about his back. He's been pretty good.
I mean,
it's not like, oh, well, the Yankees, fell apart. They are playing for the American League championship.
Flaherty's one of those guys. He took the one-year deal last year and sort of bet on himself again, thinking he could have a strong season and then go back into free agency. There could be a long-term deal somewhere. You pitch seven innings of two-hit ball in game one of the LCS, six or seven strike, like that's the kind of ace-like performance that can get you that sort of contract in the offseason and maybe help the Dodgers get to the World Series. So yeah, a couple of guys that the Dodgers acquired in the last couple of months, Flaherty and Teoscar, huge in the last couple of games for LA. But you're right, they're down 6-0 right now, top of the fourth in Dodger Stadium.
Yep, we'll keep an eye on that. But again, we'd love to hear from you. Anything you want to talk about sports wise? A lot of basketball news today as we get a preseason poll. Auburn's number 11, second highest. They're the second highest ranked SEC team. Alabama's number 2.
Oh, and speaking of basketball, we are a go for Thursday We will be on location for tip-off at Toomer's.
All right.
At the brand new War Eagle Supper Club on the rooftop of the Graduate. We will be doing a little tailgate show from very close to downtown
Good.
Auburn.
I doubt that there are a lot of folks that have done shows from the old Supper Club and the new Supper Club.
I think that we probably get to be the first two to cross. And I won't have to lie about my age to get into this one, Bill.
No, you won't
get to do the show. So
allegedly.
We're looking for the statutes. The statute's long expired. I can cop to that. So it's really looking forward to Thursday night. Tip off at Toomer is going to be a lot of fun, and we're going to be doing the show from the Supper Club on Thursday to help get folks ready. Could be a little live music, I think, already by 4 o'clock. So might be a little a little atmosphere in the background while we're doing the show, and really, really looking forward to it.
Man, it's like downtown is it's an all day thing, all day and all evening.
Yeah.
I was on with Doug a little earlier, and he asked me exactly, you know, what time does everything get started? And I said, when I clicked on the tip off at Toomer's site, it says 7 a.m. to 9 p.m. And I went, well, I don't think we're going to have anything basketball or anything that early. But basically, downtown is going to be pretty much closed down all day. I think 6 o'clock is...
I believe 4 o'clock is when live music gets started on one of the stages. And then they're going to... 6:30 is when the tip-off officially begins. 7:30 is autograph sessions on South College. And Cole Swindell, he gets going at around 8:15. So that's the schedule as far as I would say, and like you said, merchants downtown all day, but then I think the performance stuff gets going at 4 o'clock, and we are getting started at 4 o'clock.
Sounds
so that's about when you want to come check out downtown on Thursday. And like you said, Auburn 11 in the preseason. Was it AP?
Yes.
Preseason AP poll that came out today. 3 in the KenPom.
Mm-hmm.
Number 1 SEC team in the KenPom. I believe Auburn one of the more the discrepancy between where you are in the KenPom and where you are in the AP
the
poll. Yeah, in the AP poll ranking. But some promising. And what were the Chad's third team? And Janai is first team.
Yes,
is that are those the two players recognized preseason by the conference?
Going to be interesting to see if Chad starts, if he is a starter for Auburn. But I mean, he's extremely talented.
Well, one would think that it's. I mean, the competition, and Brian, we talked about this a little bit last week. Like, I know some. I mean, Jeff Borzello projects that Auburn will start all four of JP, Denver, Miles, and Chad with Janai at the five.
I don't think so either.
I think that's a small ball lineup Auburn could employ. I think Chad can play the four at times for Bruce, but I think that's probably not his best position. So if Auburn doesn't do that, then you're thinking about, well, which one of JP, Denver, Miles, and Chad isn't in the starting lineup, because those are four very accomplished players. JP has started every game the last 2 years at Furman, coming in out of the portal. Denver and Chad were both exceptional down the stretch, and Miles Kelly was the best player on an ACC team last year. So it's that's a really interesting lineup issue to solve.
I think it's going to be tough keeping Miles out of the starting lineup.
That's my opinion. Yeah.
He's just an experienced guy, can shoot the three probably better than anybody on the team, and I think he can do some other things too as far as getting his shot off and scoring.
What a great situation it is. I mean, CBM has shown he can really bring the energy off the bench. He's not that he doesn't deserve to start as well. But I mean, it's you can only start five.
I mean, I don't want to.
And I think that a lot of the times, I mean, that Auburn's going to need a more typical power forward. Four.
Right. I mean, I would think, yes, Chad Baker-Mazzara showed a willingness and even an eagerness to help the team off the bench last year. But that was also his first year on the team, and he was coming in out of junior college and stuff. Right. Like, I wonder if he sort of spent the offseason thinking.
Oh, I'm not saying I'm not saying that anybody is happy if they're not starting.
Yeah, no, but it's. I mean, you've got four players that would start for most teams in college basketball, and seemingly, unless they're your 1, 2, 3, and 4, seemingly those seemingly one of those guys.
Those four guys you would figure are going to primarily play three spots. Denver's going to play some point. It's going to be interesting to see how much point Denver does play.
I mean, I would say most teams would start. Dylan and Chaney are guys that start most places in college basketball after the seasons and careers that they've had, and figuring out which one of those two is in your starting lineup. I mean, Turtle Hudson has started his share of games at the college basketball level, and figuring out which two of those guys or one of those guys starts with Chennai is something to figure out too. I mean, I would guess Chaney is your starting four, but I don't know.
But you could start Chennai at four and play Dylan at five.
You could do that too. I think you
make that part of the rotation.
I think you probably lose a little offensively doing that. You don't hurt yourself defensively at all. But I don't know. I think Chaney. I'd be surprised if Chaney isn't the starter at four. But we'll see. Again, a great situation that Bruce has, and looks like it's another team where he's going to be playing 10 guys a lot of minutes, and there'll be plenty of minutes for everybody.
Denver would also make sense as a guy coming off
the
bench. How
many of those guys?
Denver would make sense potentially because he can come in at the one, the two, or the three. Like Denver, because he was
Auburn's best defensive guard though last year.
Although Bruce has brought his best defensive guard off the bench before. Remember Zepp was coming off the bench for a lot of. I know Denver scores.
Zepp wasn't bringing that offense.
I know they're not the same player at all. But no, the argument for Denver as a reserve would be you can use Denver and look at the one, the two, and the three. And decide who needs to come out, knowing you've got Denver Jones able to step in at any of those spots. Where with Miles and Chad, it's almost like they're not playing the same position because you could slide Denver over and play them together. But I could see the appeal of having someone who's good enough to play any of the three spots. Which Denver's probably the only one you'd say that about.
Does Auburn have? I was just thinking.
There's also Todd Pettiford, right? There's.
But I mean, does Auburn have nine seniors? It's eight or nine seniors. Because all these guys we've been talking about are seniors.
Dylan, Janai.
They're all seniors.
Chris.
Yeah.
Dylan, Janai, Chris, Chaney, Chad, Denver, and JP are all seniors. I don't believe Miles is a senior.
There's six seniors. That counts. Chris Moore is in his fifth year. Dylan Carwell is a graduate student. So there's six scholarship, fifth or sixth year guys.
Dylan, Janai, Chris, Chad, Denver, and JP, I believe, are the seniors.
And Chaney.
Oh, well,
that's seven then.
There's six.
Okay.
One, two, three, four, five. Oh, wait.
Is JP not a senior?
Chris Moore. Who'd you say, JP?
Is JP Bagheese a senior?
No.
Okay.
That's on the roster.
Okay. That would be maybe JP.
I've got him. Well, no, they did have a senior. I'm sorry.
When I sorted it. I thought
okay, hold on. Wait, there's more. I sorted it by class.
I think it's seven, isn't it?
Miles Kelly's a senior.
Oh.
Jaheim Hudgens a senior. J.P. Pegues, three. Adarian Scott's a senior. That's four more. Plus five, that's nine. Nine seniors.
He was a junior college.
Yeah, A.D. Scott's a senior.
So that's nine.
That's what I was thinking. I was thinking seniors.
AD and Miles. I was not thinking seniors. But you're right. Yeah, Miles. I guess would. I wonder how many teams in college basketball are rocking.
I didn't mention the number because I didn't have it right in front of me. But when I was talking with Bruce Pearl, I said, you don't see teams with this many seniors normally. And he talked about what all goes into and what a compliment it is to Auburn and to the players to be here, but that is a huge number of seniors.
Yeah.
The only time you used to see something like that would be a mid-major where a bunch of guys had redshirted and the team hadn't been heard of for a couple of years and they're now making a run.
Yeah, and I'd be surprised just because, one, how tight-knit this group seems to be. Also, because you had to, I think you knew what you were signing up for with a team this deep and with Bruce Pearl's track record and how he uses his players. Like, I'd be surprised if there was anyone you know, fretting or unhappy about their role, but you never know. You never know. You know, these guys are all competitors who want to be out there a lot. So
yeah, for most, I mean, it appears it's the last time round in college for these guys.
Yeah. So that's, I mean, navigating that is the cost of a really talented roster. Like navigating that is the luxury tax that you have to pay as a coach to have depth in college basketball. Is that you might you have to figure out, you know, who's on board and where they need to play. I don't know what Auburn, you know, what lineup Auburn goes with. I think JP's starting. Like let me say, like, my guess would be that JP Pegues coming in as a, it's either JP or Miles would be your, you know, if it's a new guy in
yes,
the backcourt,
yes.
Right?
Like those would be I think Miles starts.
I think they both start. I think JP's your point guard, Miles your
probably.
Two guard.
Yeah.
Probably.
I mean, and then you're, you know, probably Denver at the, I mean, I could see Miles and Chad, you know, it being a competition between the two of them because you had Chad last year and you sort of know what you have.
Chad can start at the 3 and Miles start at the 2.
Right? And then
where's Denver?
Come off the bench.
And then Denver Jones. Denver Jones could potentially come off the bench. Like there's different possibilities.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah, they're which makes for a really good scrimmage on Thursday.
Oh, I imagine, yeah.
Because you've got a couple of groups of five that can really get after it.
Oh, yeah.
All right, we will get to our bottom of the hour break. Love for you to join in here on the Monday Drive.
ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into the Monday Drive. Bill, Dan, Brian Matthews from AuburnSports.com. And let's get to the Drive Hotline sponsored by Skybar. And Spectre gets us started. Hey, Spectre.
Hey, guys. Brian, can you give me a report on injuries?
We didn't ask Coach Freeze about that. The only main one I think we're watching now is Tutaw Miller at right tackle, right? I can't think of any other big ones. And that's sort of an ongoing issue with his hip flexor. But
did they feel like Keldrick was pretty good after the Georgia game? I know he sort of limped off at the end of the Georgia game.
Or, yeah, nothing serious there as far as I know. So.
Yeah, Tutaw at right tackle would be your primary
and then,
concern. And he seemed to be in a lot of pain at the Georgia game. I wouldn't be surprised if he can't go.
Well, we'll see. And then Jamonte Waller injured his ankle or his foot in practice last week.
Had surgery, right?
Yep, had surgery out for the season.
He hasn't played that much.
No, he was on pace to redshirt, but still disappointed that he's going to miss out on this developing time.
What's the plan, Spectre? I want to let you jump back in. What's the plan? What's the plan if Tutaw can't go?
Dylan Wade.
Yeah, probably Dylan Wade to right tackle and Braden Joyner to left guard. Braden appears to be the sixth man. He's earned it. And if they have to make a change, I think that's what it'll be. Unless they look at some other things and find some other combination they like better, I'd be surprised if that happened.
Well, I think Missouri is a team Auburn can beat.
I agree.
But we're going to have to control the line of scrimmage. And with Miller being injured, and you're saying Joyner would be moving in the line?
Yeah, he'd move in at guard with Dylan Wade moving out and up. Braden's probably better suited, I would think, for running. I mean, for a guy that's just a straight ahead.
The entire offensive line is probably better suited to running.
Right. I agree with you, Brian.
Right, right. We would definitely have to have at least, I'd say, basically 50-50 running passing against them. Tell me, Brian, about Chambers. He's a senior, is that right?
They used Ronan Chambers at the end of, I believe it was the Cal game.
Yeah, he hasn't really played since then.
Ronan went in after a couple of, they weren't really thrilled with what they were getting from Percy and Tyler in the Cal game, and they ended up going with, I think it was probably Wade and Chambers.
When Tutaw was first banged up, they brought Ronan in, but they decided to switch it around a little bit and give Dylan Wade an opportunity over there at right tackle. I don't think Ronan is factoring in as a key backup at the moment, but we'll see.
Now that's one thing. The open week could have changed things a little bit. Maybe tomorrow at the viewing window, you might be able to see a
it
couple
sounded
of
like Percy had been trending in the right direction until the Georgia game, where he maybe had a setback.
Rough night. Yeah.
Hey guys. Hey.
Yeah.
I don't know if you can hear me or not.
We got you.
I'm in a spot where I can barely hear you guys. You guys are breaking up on me, so I'm going to let you go, and I'll probably call you back maybe If not, I'll talk to you later in the week.
All right. Sorry about that.
Yeah, appreciate it.
We'll talk to you, Spectre. 334-321-1390. And Tex is next. Hey, Tex.
Hey, guys. How y'all doing?
Hey, Tex. Can you hear us okay?
I can hear you perfectly.
Okay,
fine.
Cool. All right.
I just, by the way, Bill, your board op did a much better job this time. Much more pleasurable and spoke like a man. So, sorry, Dan. You didn't laugh at my joke. Dan.
I did. I laughed. I laughed. Okay. I laughed to myself. I'm on mic, so I got to, you know.
Okay. All right. So, anyway, I've lived in Baton Rouge a total of 35 years, so I've gotten to know a lot of different former LSU players, coaches, et cetera, and had the opportunity to be around a lot of them. And this weekend on Sunday, I was talking to a former player, football player at LSU, after the game about Nussmeier. And I asked him, because most likely he was an All-American, most likely will be in the Hall of Fame here pretty soon for the NFL. And I asked him, you know, what's good about Nussmeier? And he goes, did you see the throw on the tying touchdown? And yes, I don't know if you've seen it. But
oh, yeah, no, I saw that. I was watching then. That was, yeah, it was a dart.
The guy is covered. The ball is thrown to a spot. All of a sudden, as the ball is coming, he takes two steps, and now he's out in front of the guy because he's cutting across the field, hits him in dead stride. So I asked him, I said, have you watched us play? He goes, yeah, I have. And his immediate – now, he played on the offensive side of the ball, and – he immediately said, your guy delivers the ball too late. We don't make that throw.
Yeah.
And it was under duress when he made that throw. He barely got that football off. But so I'm trying to figure out why we can't get that kind of rhythm in the passing game. I don't know if it's we're too much of a read route group and the quarterback and the receivers have to be on the exact same page. But – just that's an observation from someone else completely. He also said LSU loses a game if Ole Miss's big wide receiver's healthy because he was killing them. Yeah. I can't remember his name. The big tall guy, I think, wore eight or nine. So, but that's just an observation from somebody that has no tie to Auburn whatsoever other than knowing me.
Yeah.
We look like at quarterback.
I just think the guy Auburn has right now just doesn't process things quick.
I think,
and also if the first option isn't there, it really, really slows down for that offense.
Yeah, I think he hesitates, or he's just a little slower in process. I don't think it's the offense. I don't think it's the way it's supposed to be. And yeah, that throw by Nussmeier was great. He had a few that weren't so great the other night. I mean, what was he like 20 for 50? Yeah, I mean he was. He struggled some the other night, but I mean he made some huge plays when he had to, and
Ole Miss
that's a credit
kept
to him
in the game too. So.
Yeah, they did. They should. Yeah.
And then next, I haven't heard any discussion about the Tigers winning on Saturday.
Baseball.
So
I figured when you called, it's like, yeah, that was big to win win both of that. I guess. Yeah, you know, I thought it was supposed to be one game, but they took a break after seven and played another seven innings. So, yeah, mm-hmm. they. Sounded like you know, some of the young guys swung the bat pretty well, and that's got to be good for their confidence to have won two games down at Florida State.
Yeah, 20 strikeouts and just 3 walks. Just looking at the box score, that's impressive.
Now that is something to be really excited about, because I don't know that Auburn could make it to 6 innings without having 3 walks this past year.
Yeah, and
I don't know if they could have got out of the second. Yeah, without
sometimes.
3 walks.
No, I think one error in 14 innings too.
That's good.
Yep.
Yeah.
For fall.
So
ball.
Just hearing that and the excitement coming out of it. Now there were also a couple key cogs that weren't there. McMurray and Blue.
Yep.
Weren't
that's
there,
right.
Weren't able to play. So that's another big thing. I think that as Butch has always done, he's recruited extremely well, and there's a great deal of competition here. I don't know what Florida State has coming back, but you don't. Historically, they're very, very competitive in their league, and they make it deep into the playoffs. So I think that's a pretty good start to the fall. I know they're not satisfied with that, but the pitching was well. We played really good defense, and we swung the bat extremely well. So I was really, really glad to hear that. So, and last but not least, every time y'all use the word execution, all I can think of is the Steve Spurrier comment about his offense. And he said, asked about execution, and he said, yeah, I'm all for it.
Yeah, I'm all for it. That's exactly right.
Yeah, we are too.
Anyway, yeah. All right, guys. We'll talk to you later. Thanks
all right,
for the time.
All right, good hearing from you, Tex. 334-321-1390. You can join us as well. We'll get to our final break of hour number one here on the Monday Drive.
Born and raised in Lee County, Samantha Copeland is running to be our...
Call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email thedrive@espnau.com.
Welcome back into the Drive, final segment of hour number one. Bill, Dan, and Brian Matthews. And back to the phones we go, and John is next. Hey, John.
Hey, guys. How are you?
Pretty good.
I'm sitting here watching these people try to negotiate this roundabout.
That can be entertaining at times. It can be very frustrating at others.
Oh my goodness. It's an anthropological experiment. I want to ask you a question. When was the last time you watched an Auburn football game, and when the offense came on the field, you knew something good was fixing to happen? You didn't hope something was going to happen. You knew it was going to happen.
2013.
Yeah, and parts of 2017.
Yeah,
just parts incredibly.
Of 17. When Kerryon was rolling in 17, you felt that way. Yeah.
Felt pretty good. But, I mean, I was surprised a couple of times.
Yeah.
I mean, early on, you know, before you knew what you had in Cam Petway, too. I mean. Yep.
And I feel like since then you've had a weakness somewhere you're trying to
since
overcome.
Since then it's been like maybe, you know.
Yeah.
And you've had some great players since then. But
Yeah. What season was Sean White the quarterback?
15 and 16.
Yep,
different. He comes in for Jeremy after a couple games in 15, and you know is the starter more often than not until Stidham shows up in 17.
Yeah, and Georgia knocked him out, hurt him in the game that season. But up until that game, there was a stretch of three or four or five games where the offense was just a scoring machine.
Yeah.
Is that the Petway
got hot during that time?
The Cam Petway run?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean.
Yeah, it was that hadn't happened in a long time. And I know that there's different players, there are different coaches and everything, but, I'm not a football player. I hate being a critic or anything. I sit and I think, man, is it a chemistry thing? Is it a confidence thing? What is it that's going on?
Well, I think it's a talent thing, an experience thing, and I think Auburn has kind of missed the boat at quarterback and left at really the tackle positions when it comes to pass pro, especially. So I think there are a lot of issues.
Receiver more the last 8 years or so. I mean,
They've certainly upgraded that position. The freshmen haven't quite got there yet, but DeAndre Lambert Smith has been incredible.
I'm saying, but I'm saying if you're talking about things that have plagued Auburn since, you want to start in 2018, right? I mean, 17 was the last 10-win season.
Well, yeah.
So like, I mean,
quarterback
since
other than Stidham and Bo Nix,
Auburn has not been able to have a balanced offense.
Right, and how many offensive years. Linemen have been drafted over the last 7-8 years? Not many.
And right now it seems like we've got the wide receivers to do what we, you know, to be successful. It's getting the ball to them.
Yep.
And then Hunter, he's not getting it enough. So
no, he's not.
But I just but I appreciate you taking my call, guys. Thank you.
Appreciate the call, John.
I wish we had more answers.
When you go back to Gus, I mean, how many times we talk about his offensive tackle recruiting just wasn't up to
– Right.
And his quarterback recruiting. You know, he had to – obviously, Bo was a great pickup, and I think now people are understanding that he was actually a really good quarterback at Auburn, just was not surrounded with enough other good players, right?
Oh, yeah.
Hopefully you can accept that now after you watch what he did in Oregon, and now you see what he's doing in the NFL as a starter, as a rookie quarterback.
Saturday does feel like an opportunity, though, for this offense to sort of build momentum when you think about the – I mean, you can you can try to wash away as much of a 2-4 start as possible by collecting a couple of road wins, winning a couple of your home games in November, and that would start with a win. That would start with a win Saturday at Missouri and a strong performance out of the bye week.
It'd be incredible, but I got to see it first. Show me. They're going to the Show Me State.
That's right.
They need to show me.
Yeah, they do. All right, we are halfway through here on the Monday Drive. We'll get a chance. We'll run an interview with Bruce Pearl, but your calls come first. Come on in and join us here on the Monday Drive.
Capital of Alabama. This is The Drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390, toll free at 888-382-7502, or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome in. Hour number two of the Monday Drive. Bill, Dan, Brian Matthews from AuburnSports.com. Hour number two of the show brought to you by the good folks at the Orthopedic Clinic, East Alabama's go-to center for orthopedic care with locations in Auburn and Opelika, on the web at orthoclinic.com. You can join us on the Drive hotline sponsored by Skybar. That number is 334-321-1390.
You can also text the show, 334-564-1840, on the Drive text box presented by our friends at Southeastern Industrial Contractors. They also sponsor the podcast, available wherever you get your podcasts.
And hour number one, we talked about Auburn getting back into action this week after practicing just twice last week. Hugh Freeze met with the media this morning and talked a little bit about that, Brian. I mean, they had a short week, but it sounded like he felt like they got some good work in.
Yeah, he said the game plan was in, so that's good. And they're working on finding the things they do best and trying to make sure they do those things better and don't put too many other things in there to confuse it. Make sure they can focus and do the things they do well right every time. And that to me goes back to execution and the critical moments and all that stuff. It's all kind of tied together for me. But yeah, they had two workouts, really physical on Wednesday, took Thursday, Friday off, came back and had a workout Sunday, off today, and then back at it, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday this week.
Yeah, and it's Missouri, a Missouri team that they're 5-1, but I mean they have not
that one
been,
loss was woo.
Yeah.
But everything that could go wrong, I thought, especially in the first half, went wrong.
It was a road game, and when things go bad early in a road game against a good team, they can go really bad. That's what they did, because A&M just absolutely ran it up on them.
Auburn and Missouri are both teams, though, that have yet to really deliver a complete performance against a major conference opponent.
Oh, you're right.
This year, Missouri's played three games against major conference teams. They were trailing 14-0 to Boston College, had to come back and win that game. Mm-hmm. They went to double overtime against Vanderbilt, and then their other game against a major conference team is getting destroyed by A&M. Those are the three games Missouri has played against major conference opposition this season. I mean,
they rolled it up against UMass.
It's fair to wonder what Missouri's record would be with Auburn's schedule. I mean, it's fair to wonder if Missouri has looked like a team that would beat that you feel confident would beat Cal or Arkansas or Oklahoma or win it at Georgia. So no, I think it's. I mean. You have to keep in mind where Missouri was when they started the season. But based on the body of work of these two teams, I'm not surprised at all that people think this is going to be a very close game. Bill, have you seen the line movement?
No, I have not.
So I'm checking ESPN Bet. This line opened at Missouri -7, and you can find it at...
I saw it at 7.5.
You can find Auburn now at +4. Like, this thing has moved dramatically towards Auburn in the day or so since it was introduced, and I think that's folks thinking, like, there's a lot of residual confidence in Missouri from the preseason. And we're
An 11-win team a year ago, and their schedule is a cakewalk.
And we're at a point now where there should not be residual goodwill from the preseason. You've played 5 or 6 games, and for Missouri, the fact that they've had 3 chances to look impressive against major conference teams, and they're 0-3. in the, I mean, they've won two of them, but as far as looking like a team that should be in the playoff conversation, Missouri's played three major conference opponents. They have not looked like a playoff team in any of those games.
Yeah.
You're absolutely
and
right.
It's also interesting because they had an off week, then they were on the road for the next two games. They come home against Auburn, and then they're at Alabama next week.
They're at Alabama next week. That's exactly right. That is their toughest game that they have left. I mean, they had
– They go to Norman, too, right? Or is that game at Missouri? Yeah.
They go to South Carolina.
Their schedule is about as kind as you could ask for an SEC team. You know, we didn't know Texas A&M. Texas A&M looks like they're, you know – They may be for real.
Yeah, they're contending for one of those top spots.
But, I mean, that is the toughest team they have played thus far. They've got out at Alabama, but their other road games they have are at South Carolina and at Mississippi State.
At 5-1 with this schedule, they should be a team that people think can maybe make a push for the SEC championship game and maybe the college football playoff. The fact is, though, they're fortunate to still be in that conversation because they had to rally to beat Boston College after being outplayed for multiple quarters, and then the Vanderbilt game.
They dodged a bullet. I mean, Vandy misses a chip shot field goal that would have won it in overtime.
I mean, I think Missouri could unlock what it was that had people thinking going into the season that they could be a college football playoff team and a dark horse SEC championship game type of team. I also think that they could be. They could be a team that was competitive against Boston College and Vanderbilt for a reason, and if that's what they are, then they could be in trouble against Auburn and Alabama, and for that matter, Oklahoma. Like, I mean, if the line of scrimmage is a problem and you're getting pushed around by Boston College and Vanderbilt, I don't feel confident about your chances in any of those games.
No, as we said in the first hour, I mean, there are so many teams in this league that are very close. That have either won them very close, like you mentioned, Missouri's on one side. They've won those ball games where they could have lost. Auburn's on the other side. They've lost the games they could have won.
Boy, have they.
But there's so many teams in this league that it's that final line between winning and losing. And Auburn's got to get over – they got to get over that hump, that line, whatever. I mean, that's the thing that's got to happen and needs to happen right now after an open date. If it doesn't happen this week – I don't disagree. I mentioned I was on with Doug during the Max Roundtable a little earlier. I don't know that I disagree with him. He said he feels like Auburn should have a good shot at beating Missouri, but he feels like if they lose to Missouri, they probably lose to Kentucky. He feels like he said, I think Auburn either goes 2-0 the next 2 weeks or they're 0-2.
I could see
that. They lose this ball game after an open date. It's going to be very difficult to keep up the, we're close. We're going to keep pushing hard.
It is.
They need to get
results. I don't care what a coach or a player says. It just sets in.
Yeah.
I mean, Coach Freeze, I guess Georgia was the first time that he expressed any sort of concern about the effort or the fight in the team. I was a little surprised to hear concerns about the effort after the Georgia game. I would say that even if effort has not been an issue at any point, at some point it starts to the losing is going to start to wear on a team, and I would think that a loss to Missouri could be the, that could be a breaking point where it's going to be tough to get the same sort of effort you got even in the first 6-7 games out of that team the rest of the way.
We'd love your thoughts on anything football related.
That would be the concern at least, and maybe. You can try to offset that by working in some guys who haven't played very much, and maybe they'd be at different positions. Although Auburn has been going down the depth chart,
Auburn's played more defensive freshman minutes than any other team.
I mean, I'm thinking scholarship players on defense who haven't seen the field very much. Like, it's a short list of guys, and Auburn could start to get into that reserve a little bit, but. I mean, I don't know if that's going to be the healing balm that fixes everything if you can't
a win.
Yeah, if you can't beat Missouri,
that'll
yeah.
You know,
that is really there is moves. There's no more no. Moral victory.
Nothing
no,
else.
No.
Playing better, looking better, being close. Nope. No. Win.
Well, you've been close.
Yes.
Right. Like you lost. I mean, you lost close games to Cal and Arkansas and Oklahoma.
Right.
And it didn't. It didn't leave you feeling there's only so much silver lining. It's mostly cloud, right? Like it's mostly cloud.
Yep. So anything on your mind, football wise, basketball, some some news today. I mean, the AP preseason poll comes out. Auburn is number 11, the second-rated SEC team. The preseason, the SEC media preseason, even though tomorrow's media day,
yeah,
we get the SEC
a day early.
Yeah, we get the results before the media is there. I mean, boy, they ought to do that in football.
What a deal.
Yeah. But Auburn picked second behind Alabama. Jani Broome, a preseason first team All SEC. Chad Baker Mazzara is third team on their preseason All Conference team. And while we don't have a call now, had a chance a little earlier today to have about 10 minutes with Coach Bruce Pearl. So I thought we'd let you hear that, and then we'd love to hear from you as we continue with the Monday Drive. Very pleased to be joined here on ESPN 106.7 by Auburn basketball coach Bruce Pearl. Bruce, how you doing today?
I'm doing good, Bill. How are you?
Doing fine, man. It is exciting. Folks are very excited about the upcoming basketball season. You've got a half dozen players with a tremendous amount of experience coming back to take on what is obviously the most challenging schedule in Auburn basketball history.
We are excited about it, Bill. You know, I've got a good veteran group. We're going to have a brand new backcourt, which will present some real challenges, but be very exciting. The front court returns with Jani Broome, Dylan Cardwell, Chaney Johnson, you know, sort of anchoring that. And as you mentioned, probably without question, the most challenging schedule in Auburn basketball history and probably the most challenging non-conference schedule in all of college basketball.
Oh, no doubt about it. You talked about that with us a couple of weeks ago. Just wanted to know how things have been going since then. With you mentioned the backcourt, really interesting. J.P. Pegues, who has a lot of experience at Furman coming in. Denver Jones just got a few minutes at point last year, and then Tahad Pettiford. How are things looking there?
Well, that's exactly right. You've got it nailed. You know, J.P. has come in and done a really good job. You know, the step up from the SoCon to the SEC, the athleticism, the speed and quickness. But he's done a really good job making that adjustment. You know, JP is a scoring, shooting point guard that is a solid defender. And, you know, he's got the makeup of a point guard. Denver Jones has been a scoring guard most of his career. And he really has done a nice job picking up the idea of not only being a scoring guard, but actually having the ball in his hands to play make and lead the team. That's an enormous combination and a lot of responsibility of having to play both of those positions. I think Denver's handling it real well. And then Tahad Pettiford was a guy that, even though his size says he's a point guard, his game says he's a two guard, a scoring guard. And it's a lot to put on a freshman having to play both positions. But Tahad's got a great feel for it. And I think that that's that gives us a great deal of depth at the position, but like all 40 minutes of our point guard play will be somebody that didn't play there last year.
Really interesting to see a team like yours last year that played double-figure players, double-figure minutes a game. It looks like you're in a position to do that with the depth and the versatility that you have. You're 2 and 3 deep, it appears, at just about every position.
Well, that's been our style and our system for a long, long time. It just got a lot of notoriety last year because we were 10 deep, double digit. We're almost always 10 deep. Not at least 9 have been double digit all over career. Just got more attention last year. So this is the way I like to play. It helps us win games, I think, at the end of games. I think it helps us win games at the end of seasons. I think it also keeps for a happier locker room. Yes, everybody would like a little bit more, but there are very few guys in our locker room that are not contributing.
You mentioned JP a little while ago. The other veteran that you bring in is Miles Kelly. With Miles and CBM, you've got some explosive potential there at the wing.
Yeah, and great length at the wings. Really, good to be able to, you know, bodies on bodies and really athletic, and I think we're going to be hard to score up again, particularly at the rim. You've got to be able to challenge shooters with that length, and I think it's going to help us contest shots. I hope it does translate to rebounding, because finishing possessions both on the offensive and the defensive end are particularly important. And you know what? Last year, the game, close games we lost, it really came down to free throw shooting. And if we can improve in that area, almost that area alone, I think we can continue to think that this team will compete for championships.
As we look toward the front court at the four and the five, again, the versatility there, Janai still getting some work at the four?
He is. And, of course, if he's getting some work at the four, that means he's out there playing with Dylan Cardwell at the five. And there are going to be, I'm working at playing that rotation every game, but it's going to be put to a test. And so the one thing I don't want to do is I don't want to get to a point where we're too big and too slow to be able to play as fast as we like to play. If both those guys would pick up their pace and play as fast as they're both capable of playing.
Something that is, I think, very unusual these days, especially at a major conference, is the number of seniors that you have. I mean, you have so many players, and most of them have experience here at Auburn, but just talk about having that type of experience on a squad.
Well, you know what? I think it speaks to a couple of things. First of all, the transfer portal does allow you to bring in some seniors or guys that are upperclassmen, and we've all realized that in college basketball, the transfer portal and bringing the right guys have been a great, great mix. I think the second thing is we got a number of guys that are graduating. We've had 40 kids graduate in the last 10 years, and nobody in college basketball, particularly at the Power Five level, has even come close to that. Our guys love Auburn, and they love the way they're treated, the way they're supported. And as a result, they really aren't trying to leave. They're trying to stay. They're not in the transfer portal chasing an extra dollar. I think that's why this team has the number of veterans that we have.
You mentioned a couple of weeks ago to us that you weren't, even though you had a lot of experience, you might know a little less about this team. You feel a little bit better about the combos and everything as you get ready for the start of the season?
Well, I still think there's a lot to be learned, yet. And I think the way you learn that is you really learn that, by playing somebody else. You just don't know where you are until you get out there and you play somebody else. And so that's got to be, obviously, got to be an important factor for this team.
Well, you don't play somebody else, but tip-off at Toomer's coming up on Thursday, an opportunity for folks to be there, for you to be playing in front of a large group. And, it's great to see the SEC Network's going to carry it as well.
Well, yeah, I'm excited about tip-off at Toomer's, and Cole Swindell is going to be there to have a concert downtown. This is going to be a really friendly event for the entire community or for the surrounding areas. What an opportunity. And so just want to encourage our fans from all over to get there and come to a really, really cool event. And then another reminder that on November 1st, our home opener, we're playing Florida Atlantic, a team that was in the Final Four 2 years ago. And that game is not part of the season ticket package, and we purposely did that so that our fans that don't normally get a chance to see us play at Neville Arena can actually buy good seats for that game. And the proceeds from that game are going to be the Melton Scholars Program, the Together We Will Scholarship for first-generation students, African-American students, kids that maybe didn't think they could afford the unbelievable education at a place like Auburn, to give these young people real scholarships to help them make the Auburn dream possible. So that's on November 1st. And so tickets are available on that contest, and you'll be doing two good things. One, you're going to be seeing some great basketball, but you're going to be supporting a really important scholarship program at Auburn.
Oh, absolutely. And you did a great job of segueing. I was going to lead into that. So you got one of my questions checked off there. So before we let you go, I wanted to get one more thought just on the schedule that you got. When you've got, Duke and Houston and Purdue and the likes of teams like this on the schedule, you've got to feel pretty good about your team. But I loved your comments as you were talking. And again, talk about what went into making up a schedule like this.
Well, you know what? I think that our fans deserve it. I think our players, deserve it. And we're trying to keep our program in the top 25 in the country. This is the toughest schedule in the history of Auburn basketball, and like I said, the toughest schedule probably in college basketball. And we're doing so. Again, it's easier to get there than it is to stay there. And part of it is by this, you know, playing as challenging a schedule as we possibly can. It'll certainly, you know, get us ready for the SEC. But it'll also create some adversity, you know, for our team. Adversity will reveal our character. We're going to lose a few games that that we might not lose in the non-conference, and how this team handles that will go a long way to what kind of year we have.
Bruce, really appreciate you spending a little bit of time with us here on ESPN 106.7. Thanks again, and we'll see you at Toomers.
All right, my brother. Appreciate it. Thanks so much. War Eagle.
Coach Bruce Pearl. Yeah, had a little time this morning. Today, apparently, I guess he was just back-to-back-to-back-to-back interviews. It's like, so Grady could squeeze us in.
You know, going through the car wash before media days.
That's right.
This week, where he'll be talking about this exciting season of Auburn men's basketball to the press later this week. Tip off for Toomers on Thursday. You got Tiger Talk tonight on ESPN 106.7, by the way, or on Wings 94.3. You got Tiger Talk. I imagine there could be some. There could be some basketball discussion on tonight's episode with the busy week that the Auburn men's and women's basketball programs will be having.
Oh yeah, no question. All right, so we'll get to our first break of the hour number two here on the Monday Drive. Love for you to join in. 334-321-1390.
Achilles tendonitis is often as painful.
ESPN 106.7.
Welcome back in. Bill, Dan, and Brian Matthews here in the studio on this Monday edition of The Drive. Yeah, we'd love for you to join in. Anything you want to talk about, your thoughts on football, crazy, another crazy weekend. I love the way, I mean, college football now, most of the games are, man, you know, up in the air. There's so many close ball games now and games that used to feel like there's no chance for this team. Everybody does have a chance. And the transfer portal, Brian Jason was talking about this the other day. He had said he thought the transfer portal was really just going to benefit the top teams. And the top teams are getting good players, but
sure. But
a lot of their other players that weren't getting to play are moving to other schools.
That would have been stuck.
It is much more competitive, and that's why you said earlier, I think the first 12-team playoff is going to be tremendously excited because different teams have a chance.
I do too. We still don't know which teams are going to get hot second half of the season.
Right.
Which team may get hot in November and start making a run.
There could be a team or two out there with a couple of losses right now that gets hot down the stretch and could have a chance to win it all.
Jason's concern was and I think it was understandable that you would have stockpiling of top tier talent by the programs with the most NIL resources. And I don't think you've seen that. Like, you still have – I mean, there are some places that have more depth than others, but you don't have a situation like you had a couple of – I mean, I think that the depth situation for the top teams was probably better a couple of years ago than it is now, because a couple of years ago, a freshman or a sophomore who wanted to transfer had to sit out a year, and now freshmen and sophomores who don't like their place on the depth chart can go leave somewhere else for playing time immediately. And I think that's winning out over even, we'll pay you a lot to stay here and be the third stringer. Like, I think teams are, I'll make almost as much or as much, and I'll also have playing time somewhere else, and that seems to be winning the argument.
It's everybody predicted one thing, and we're not just talking about Jason. We're talking about a lot of national people.
Sure,
the NCAA coaches, the teams
with the most money.
This is the worst thing ever.
These few schools with the most money, they're gonna get them all,
and they're wrong again.
Well, the thing is, even the schools with the most money don't want to be paying their third teamers more than other teams are paying their first teamers.
Right.
And that's where it is. I mean, so what incentive is there to stay?
And the really good players cost more.
Sure they do.
So if you're paying a bunch for the superstar quarterback or left tackle or receiver or pass rusher, it makes it tougher to spend enough to pay for the second team offensive tackle.
And a lot of these guys, and you probably have a better idea of this than I do, Brian, but I would still think that if you're asking – I mean, what percentage of bowl subdivision D1 freshmen believe that they'll be in the NFL someday? And right, the number's probably in the 90s.
It's a very high, it's a high percentage.
Right, and, and because of that, playing time is incredibly important because you're not going to be able to, it's very tough to make the case that you're an NFL player as somebody's backup or as somebody's third stringer. And so, and maybe as you get into fourth and fifth year seniors and guys who maybe have a better understanding of the fact that they're not going to be in the NFL, like maybe it gets a little bit easier to, like, you know, it seems to be more of those in the, in the transfer portal. But when you're talking about guys in their first couple of years, when it's time to prove on the field that you could be in the NFL someday, I think more than ever before, players want to spend, you know, they'll compromise certain things if it gets them on the field. Like they'll, you know, it's about playing time. And that's something that even if you have the best NIL situation, you only have a certain amount of playing time to offer. And that's something that I think some of the best recruiters are coming to grips with, is that, and I mean, it also comes up when you're trying to re-recruit your roster, which I'm sure will be an important, it'll be an important thing for Hugh Freeze after the season is over.
Oh yes. Yeah, I don't know how the season's going to turn out, but between the end of the season and signing day, which is December 4th, I believe.
It is.
We're still going to have that date. They just won't sign NILs. They'll sign
scholarship agreements or financial agreements.
Yeah.
Financial agreements financial aid papers.
Yes, yeah. Yes. But so between that time and then the portal, I think, opens up shortly after that, I think Auburn is just going to be a wild, you know, few weeks in there.
Yeah, right. I mean, everything is still that is something that still is going to have to be at some point something done about. There's too many different things that are having to be dealt with at the same time.
I don't get the sense. We talked about this a little bit last week, Brian. And again, we there are six more games left in the season, and that could write a lot of the story. But I don't get the sense that Auburn is bracing for a mass exodus of players who have been who factor into the plans for next year and the year beyond. Now there could be players who don't like where they are in the depth chart who are going to leave. That happens everywhere. But I think a lot of the young, I mean, I would think that if you're talking about a combination of, and winning matters too, but if you're talking about a combination of a well positioned NIL situation and playing time to offer, like, I would think Auburn would have a compelling argument to keep a lot of these guys around if they wanted to test the market after the season was over.
Auburn's not a school where coaches leave very often or players leave very often on their own accord, right? It's mostly
not for greener pastures. Right.
I think the biggest fight is going to be holding on to this top three or top four recruiting class. And then being able to fill out, you know, those needs in the portal as quickly and decisively as possible. Now with the new rules that are coming, once you sign a transfer person to a financial agreement, they can't be recruited by other schools. So that's going to help out as far as all the drama that you get with guys changing their mind and going to another school at the last minute and stuff. So that'll help out, I think, a little bit as far as the portal and everything goes on with it. And they're shortening it up too.
If Thorne's Auburn's guy the rest of the season at quarterback, do you expect Auburn to be shopping at the top of the transfer portal market for a quarterback the moment that portal's open?
I expect it regardless of what happens on the field, period.
Okay. I would think the one thing that could change that, I would imagine, would be if Walker or Hank were to go on the field and thrive.
Yes,
and
say something were to happen to Peyton. Somebody goes in and just lights it up.
And, you know, I would
still think Auburn would go after him.
I still think so. But it makes maybe it changes the priority.
Maybe it would be a different type that you'd go.
Oh,
after.
I would say it absolutely changes the urgency. If you see something productive on the field from Walker or Hank between now and the end of the season, it changes the urgency a little bit. But I still think that. Like, I mean, that's and I don't necessarily expect that. So it's like I'm thinking that if it's Thorne getting the majority of the playing time at quarterback the rest of the way, you know, that would suggest that Auburn is going to be is going to be shopping for a new quarterback in the offseason.
I'd say it's 100% no matter what happens. I just I can't imagine that scenario. You know, we're looking at Auburn's final six games where any quarterback on Auburn is going to have, even the starter is going to have one of those fantastic, you know, six games to, over the final part of the season.
Well, the sense I get is that there's, I mean, if you're evaluating the quarterbacks now, I mean, and a lot of the criticism of Thorne is valid. I don't know what you get from Hank that feels like an upgrade over Peyton right now. And Walker, I have no idea, except that my understanding is that he's been the scout team quarterback.
He's running a scout team. He's not going through the game prep.
They didn't bring him to Athens.
Except for the other team.
So a quarterback who's not traveling would seem to be pretty far from the, you know, from the playing time question right now.
Auburn this season is going to play to win. So they're not going, going to be a game where they say, okay, we're just going to start playing our young guys. Right, that's not going to happen. They're going to keep playing to win, and as long as they are in it, you know, I think Peyton, as long as he's healthy, is the starter. Mm-hmm. Hank is the number two, and I don't think we'll get to three and our four.
All right, let's get to our. We need to get to our bottom of the hour break. Who do we have?
We got Rain Man hanging.
Rain
on.
Rain Man, hang on. Yeah, we're way behind. We have to get to our bottom of the hour break. You'll be up when we come back here on the Monday Drive.
Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email us at thedrive@espnau.com.
Welcome back into the Monday Drive. Bill, Dan, and Brian, and let's get right to the Drive Hotline sponsored by Skybar. Rain Man's been hanging on for a few minutes. Hey, man, how are you doing?
I'm well. How are you today, sir?
Doing pretty good.
All right, I'm going to tell you how I think Auburn could possibly steal a victory this weekend. But first, I've got to ask you a question to make sure I understand something correctly.
All right.
In college football, when a quarterback is tackled behind the line of scrimmage, they call that a sack. And that is counted as a rushing attempt, and the negative yardage is subtracted from their total rushing yardage, correct?
That is correct. Different than how the NFL does. Right. The NFL does not count sacks.
Very much so.
Right. The NFL, it comes off your passing yardage.
So in the Oklahoma football game, in the first half, our quarterback, Peyton Thorne, had 10 rushing attempts and one sack. That means at least 9 of those 10 were most likely called rushing plays or plays where it was a run-pass option.
Now, hold on. Now, keep in mind, though, you also have situations where a pass play turns into a scramble.
If you get past the line of scrimmage, then that's a rush. Right.
So we had 9 more rushing attempts where he at least got positive yards on the scramble, or it was a run pass option. He chose to keep it and run it, or it was just a called run play for him to run the ball.
Yeah, you're right.
In the second half, we had 6 rushing attempts and 3 sacks. So it seems to me like we were intentionally calling less rushing plays for him, or he was choosing to keep the ball less when it was his option to give or keep in the second half, and that led to a less effective offense, and then more sacks, and then the turnover because the offensive line was giving up a lot of pressure. So it seems to me that our offense is most effective when the quarterback can run the football effectively. And if we slow the game down and run the ball, especially with the quarterback, like we did in the first half of the Oklahoma game, we can stay in there long enough to maybe get a field goal chance or a late touchdown chance at victory. If we go get a quarterback in the portal, he needs to be one who can run the ball more effectively than Peyton. And perhaps there's someone else on the roster who can, but I don't think so.
No.
I feel like we've got kind of a Gus Malzahn light in our head coach now. His offense is only going to work just like the previous head coach's offense if it has an effective running quarterback. That's what's missing from this offense with the current quarterbacks we have. That's what I think.
It's interesting.
You guys let me know what you think.
That's it's an interesting thought because I've wondered about. I mean, I've often thought Peyton's running is a strength of his game compared to what you've gotten out of his passing in the year and a half or so that he's been the
starter. Yeah.
I mean, it's interesting math from Rain Man. I would still say the efficiency numbers of, you know, per rush for the Auburn quarterback, even when you take the sacks out, the running from the quarterback position has not necessarily been a strength.
And if you look
of the offense,
if you look at Hugh Freeze's quarterbacks through the years, they don't get many. There aren't many specifically quarterback run plays called. I think It surely it doesn't hurt any team to have a quarterback that can run. I think that Hugh Freeze perhaps ought to call more designed runs.
Yeah, I agree in that respect. Yes, I think that would help things.
I think
more
if Auburn
ran
the ball with 27 and ran the ball more with Peyton,
yeah,
I think they'd be better served here down the stretch. But it's not like Gus, where this is an offense that requires the quarterback or that expects the quarterback to be carrying it double-figure times a game.
Gus had this great system for dual-threat quarterbacks, and then he spent the next 7 or 8 years trying to sign a drop-back quarterback. So it gets really backwards the way I look at it sometimes. But I think Hugh Freeze would prefer a dual-threat quarterback. That's one of the reasons he wanted Deuce Knight over some other guys. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, when Auburn pursues a portal quarterback, he will look at one that can run the ball and throw the ball better. But to me, in this offense, being able to make a quick correct decision, and being accurate are two things that you had to put a lot of value on in a quarterback. Auburn's not getting that consistently enough. I don't feel like.
Well, no, I mean, I think there's an argument to be made that if the quarterback is going to run as much as Peyton Thorne has run it this year, you'd probably want a quarterback who excels at that. At the same time, I think it's fair to wonder if the quarterback should be running it as much as Auburn has asked the quarterback to do. I mean, the Rain Man was mentioning the Oklahoma game. And in the Oklahoma game, Jarquez and Damari carry it a combined 24 times. And then you have 19 carries from 17 from Peyton and two direct snaps to Sam Jackson that are lumped in there as well. So sort of, and those are 19 rush attempts. Granted, the sacks are baked in to that, but those are 19 rush attempts where Auburn has 23 yards total from Peyton Thorne and Sam Jackson. The 24 rush attempts with Jarquez and Damari get you 120 yards on the ground. The 19 rush attempts without the running backs, the 19 rush attempts with Peyton Thorne and two direct snaps to Sam Jackson get you 23 total yards. And so it's like, I don't know if the answer is run the quarterback more. I think it's fair to wonder if you're going to run the quarterback this much, if you should be, if you need someone better suited for that. But it still feels like the strength of this team running the football is at the running back position.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. All right, 334-321-1390. Let's get to Mitch before we get to our final break. Hey, Mitch.
Hey, guys. A couple things here. Did any of y'all watch the last 2 minutes of the SC Penn State game?
No, I was at a concert. Didn't get a chance to.
Okay. Well, I'm gonna put that loss on Lincoln Riley, and I think even Gary Danielson said something about his time management at the end of that game. I was watching it, and it looked to me like he wanted to try to set up for a field goal, like on the last play of the game.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it was third and long or third and medium. Is this the third and six
interception?
It may have been.
It's the interception.
I figured you might have watched it. You're the SoCal guy.
Yeah, but that's not my flavor. That's not my preferred flavor.
I know. You're UCLA. I know.
I'm not watching that.
Root against them.
Not watching that this year.
Well, yeah, I know. They're not very good either.
No.
But he, in my opinion, he ended up losing the game. And then it was like during the overtime, he started using his timeouts. He had either two or three in the last 2 minutes.
They weren't in field goal range though, Mitch. It's third and six at like midfield. So like they need a first down to get the field goal. And I mean, so I don't necessarily hate the decision to throw on third and six at the Penn State 45 with 14 seconds left, because if you don't get that first down, I mean, you could be attempting a 60 or a 55 yard field goal to win in a tie game versus, I mean, you could have played for overtime, I guess, but that's not really Lincoln Riley's style. Like he decided to throw that ball instead. But it's I believe Penn State throws an interception on the resulting drive, so it still goes to overtime. But Danielson didn't like the decision to throw on third and six.
No. He didn't like that he wasn't using his timeouts. Letting the clock run.
Yeah. They did not know. They probably could have. So about 30 seconds expires between the second down play and the third down play. Jay Fair getting a lot of playing time for SC, by the way, former Auburn wide receiver out there in Los Angeles now. But that's if you're driving for a game winning field goal, it does seem as though SC probably could have utilized their timeouts a little bit earlier.
LSU, Ole Miss, great game.
That one we were able to see.
Well, I was glad to see LSU beat somebody like on a last second throw or whatever, and it wasn't Auburn. So I don't know how many times they've done that to us, especially in Tiger Stadium. So 88. Well, it wasn't the last play of the game, but the earthquake game comes to mind.
07, yeah. Right? You know? The eventual national champion team in 07. Matt Flynn drops one in there with a second left.
Right. So, yeah, it was really good to see LSU beat somebody besides us down there on the last second throw. And the last thing I've got, I bet on football games on the weekends, and I listen to Lee Sterling, and I listen to another guy that comes on Bill King's show and usually take their advice. I do all right, but the last 2 weeks, I decided not to listen to them, do my own research. Well, I went 14-2.
Wow.
Yeah.
In the last 2 weeks on college football games. So,
whoa.
Start planning the trip to Vegas, man.
Somebody's gonna have a good Christmas.
We're gonna be calling. We're gonna be calling Mitch for his tips every week. I tell you what, it's crazy. You can't think things aren't the same as they've been. That's what we're talking about with college football. Good job, Mitch.
Right. I guess what do they call it? Parody. I love.
I think it's because he listens to this show, right? And he gets all the info from us.
I take David Paschal.
You're right.
Because I'm also in the picking contest that you guys have there at the radio station. So, I listen to that, and I don't think anybody picked. Well, I didn't pick Kentucky or to lose to Vanderbilt, and that's all I got, guys. War Eagle. Let somebody else get in.
Appreciate it, Mitch.
Yep. As a matter of fact, and so we're on the way back from the ELO show in Atlanta, and I'm listening to the LSU Ole Miss game. And on the only way I could pick it up was on XM, and the only broadcast they had, the Ole Miss broadcast.
Oh, wow.
My goodness.
I bet they're losing
their mind.
That
was entertaining. Let me tell you, that was entertaining because we got them. We got them. We had them. We had them. What are we doing? Overtime. And it's first, where'd they end up at they ended up at the 40-yard line and kick a 57-yard field goal in overtime. First and 10 from the 25. They end up fourth and 25 from the 40 and kick a 57-yard field goal. But listen to David Kellum as they come back from commercial. It's like, now we got to stop them. We need an interception. There's a touchdown. Game over. We're right back.
Goodbye, everybody.
Yeah.
And they did.
It was that quick.
Since it was XM, it was like, shh. Then channel so-and-so. It went right to the, it was
post-game. You hit the post-game button?
No post-game. It was, the little automated thing that's telling you what's on different channels.
So that was the end of the Ole Miss transmission.
Channel 192.
End transmission. Yeah. Right there. Wow. That's remarkable. I mean, I remember listening to that's always the opposing team's radio call for like a heartbreak.
Oh, man.
I've been part of a couple of them. I've been the voice of a couple of Troy heartbreaks, but I think it was Eli calling the field goal for A&M that beat Bama a couple of years ago. When and he was just like,
you know what the best is? The best is when schools have post game.
Oh sure,
post game call in shows.
But I think
LSU post game when they lose, Alabama's post game when they lose. Auburn doesn't have a post game call in now.
I think A&M. A&M was lining up to kick the field goal to win. And I think Eli was just like, all right, well, you'll know from the crowd if it went in or not.
Yeah,
like he just and he never says anything. There's wild celebration, and then they just go to commercial.
Yep.
Like Eli was like, I'm not going to need to even tell you whether or not this field goal went in for A&M.
All right, we need to get to our final break. We got to get Brian's Monday musings thoughts and everything when we come back here on the Monday Drive.
Don't buy the lie. This is Lee County District Attorney Jessica Venturi with tips to help keep your...
Online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of the drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email the drive at ESPNAU.com.
Final couple of minutes of the Monday Drive. Bill, Dan, Brian Matthews from AuburnSports.com. And yeah, we haven't had a chance to really get your little recap of one of the more popular things for me. I mean, I love a lot about AuburnSports.com, but I always look forward to the Monday musings.
Yep,
brought to you by Uncle Keith's Red Sauce.
Delicious Uncle Keith's Red Sauce. Talked about how well Auburn's recruiting in contrast to how they're not playing as well on the field right now, and how maybe what happened at Florida last year is not going to be the same outcome for Auburn.
But so we'll have to wait and see. The best way to ensure that is win.
Win, yep. And then Cyndi Lauper was the musical guest. Terrific.
4 years.
Yep. Been a minute.
Captain Lou Albano in that video.
Right. Yep. And, of course, Uncle Keith's Red Sauce available Publix, Piggly Wiggly, Renfro, statewide. You can order online. Use discount code BMAT15 for 15% off. It's delicious, homegrown right here in the state of Alabama.
And how can everybody keep up with everything that's going on there at Auburn Sports?
Check us out, auburnsports.com. Follow me on Twitter, /X and threads at BMATAU. Plenty of football coverage. Some baseball and basketball also coming up this week.
Great stuff. Brian, have a great week.
Yeah, I appreciate it. Love being here.
All right, we will be back with you tomorrow. We're out of time, though, for the Monday Drive. Have a good one, everybody. We are out of here.